direct from the web, it's Billy Masters Live. And now, please welcome your host, Billy Masters.
Jesus, that was loud. Oh my God. Hey everybody, welcome to Billy Masters Live. I am your host, Billy Masters, slightly less aware, but we'll get to that in a minute today. Thank you, Monica. Today is Thursday, October 28th. I see my whole panel backstage. Everyone has shown up. And they, all right, two of them are smiling. One's kind of scowling, but that means they can hear me. So that's good. Okay. Before we get to the panel, you know, I usually start with a fun story. This is a tragic story. I'm in Fort Lauderdale, first off. And if any of you should see me in Fort Lauderdale, like over Halloween or between now and Halloween, please, I beg of you, and I've never said this to anyone in my life, hands off the penis. Hands off the penis. You know how they say you should never cook bacon in the nude? Okay. Now, I know that impulsively, half of my audience just grabbed their nether regions. Let me add this. You should never eat a cup of boiling hot tomato soup in the nude. Okay. I don't think details need to be gone into, but I frequent a place called New York Grilled Cheese on Wilton Drive. This is not their fault, because anyone who's gone there knows that their tomato soup is tepid at best. But when you put it in the microwave and put it on your table and sit down and sort of jostle the table, well, let me just say, my inner thighs were not what they once were. There is a blister on the good side. And as to my unmentionables, let's not even mention them. Sort of picture a sausage that has been on the hibachi a bit too long. Okay. It has been staggeringly painful. This was last night. And you think to yourself, who do you call? Do you call the paramedics? Because you really can't sit in the car and drive yourself to the emergency room. And you look online and you type into Google. You don't even know. First off, you can't type in tomato soup. Can't even type in soup. The best you can type in is, what do you do if you spill hot coffee in your lap? And even then, you want to know what the responses are. That's what the response is. So anyway, I have survived. Okay, the two things they say, petroleum oil, you know, like petroleum jelly, and aloe. So my crotch has never smelt more fragrant. It has never been more lubricated, but hands off, because ow. Okay. Anyway, that is all I have to say to you on that subject. And that is the longest, I haven't told anybody about this except for you. And you know why? Because you're my faithful viewers. All right. I have a great panel today because we've done a lot of these panel shows, and I really, you know, I've staggered it with various ages, various types of jobs. I really wanted three young-ish people who work in the entertainment industry, because so much has been going on in the entertainment industry. And I'm curious, being somewhat older, what these young people say. So all of our co-hosts, they are no longer panelists. They are co-hosts this week. They're performers in various media. Mark McKillop primarily works on stage, although not Broadway. Johnny Beauchamp is active in television and film. Jason Dotley has acted, sung, and hosts nude pool parties, which, by the way, I can't go to for the next couple weeks. So anyway, I think that with the three of them, we kind of cover everything. So let's bring everyone up. First, Mark McKillop is here. Hey, Mark.
Hi.
Oh, good. We have sound.
That's quite a story you opened the show with.
Well, we'll ask. And we have Jason Dotley and Johnny Beauchamp. So let me ask, have any of you ever had burns by bisque?
No. No, but I would like to offer...
Yes, Johnny.
A Puerto Rican family remedy right off the boat. My great grandmother swore by this. You get a burn, Crest toothpaste, put toothpaste on it, and it will, you know, it's like Windex to the Greeks. Like, you know, it's like a miracle.
Really?
You know what? Try that. Colgate works too.
All right. So we're not endorsing just one brand.
Yeah.
Make sure there's a fluoride in it.
Fluoride. Yeah. Oh, well, the key ingredient, clearly. Yes. Jason, any tips from you in the penal department?
You mean in terms of getting bacon grease on it?
Well, or anything hot?
Don't. Well, I mean, I've had mine broken. So, I mean, I don't have a lot of pity.
No.
For you.
Please.
No. No. It involves emergency rooms, a lot of shame, and it is a downer.
Yeah. Right. So that was my concern, is how do you go in and say, hi, I spilled soup on my penis?
The same way you go in and you say, hi, I have broken my penis having sex.
Well, how do
and
you?
The doctor?
Oh, having sex. All right.
And the doctor and the doctor and I said, it's very swollen. And the doctor opened my underwear and said, oh, my God, yes, it is very swollen. I saw a specialist who was very cool. And he said, you know what? This happens often. You're smart. I came in the moment it happened. And the worst part about it is I couldn't use it for 2 weeks. And I had to ice it in the morning and ice it in the evening, which ironically became very pleasurable.
Yes. Okay. So I had those Insta ice packs in my freezer. And when I put them on it and put the underwear over it to hold it in place, it was fantastic. It was the only thing that helped. Oh, if this ever happens to somebody, you don't put ice on it immediately. Go in the shower. You have to run cold water over. I know, I'm telling this like perhaps somebody else might burn their penis, but you know, these things happen.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm from the South, so we learn early on that you have a grease splatter cover and that you just don't have your penis out when you're making bacon. Because bacon's my favorite food, and I've been very tempted before. God's perfect food.
All right, well, thank you for that. Now let's just move on. I'm curious, over the past few weeks, Broadway's slowly begun to reopen. So I want to start with my New Yorkers, Mark and Johnny, to see if you've been to a Broadway show, what's it like, what precautions are being taken for the audience and for the cast members. I will go to not Broadway's Mark McKillop first.
I've been to a bunch of shows. I've been very fortunate to have a lot of friends who are in shows currently. So they've been giving me their tickets to their invited dresses. So I've seen like pretty much everything that's open right now, which has been lovely.
How have you felt? Have you felt comfortable?
Yeah, it's been, I mean, it's, at this point I'm so used to wearing a mask. So it's just, I mean, you have to wear a mask the whole show unless you're actively eating or drinking, and which I always have a double champagne with me at my seat when I'm seeing a show. Kind of my theater tradition, but yeah, it's fine. I feel safe. I mean, you have to be vaccinated to get into the theater and you have to wear a mask the entire time. So, I mean, theaters are kind of the safest place to be right now.
And do you feel when you go in that everybody is actually following these rules? Like, have you seen people lower their masks during performances, stuff like that?
Well, I mean, I've seen it. There's a guy in front of me at Tina Turner who just took his mask down for a really long time. And the ushers, there's COVID safety teams in theaters now. So they come up to you like an usher would with a flashlight and they're like, put your mask back up.
Oh, cool. All right. So they are taking it seriously.
They're on top of it.
Cool. Johnny, what about you? Have you been to any performances?
Yeah, actually. Yeah. I'm a little bit jealous of Mark because I haven't been invited as much. So I've been like sneaking in. Like I know I snuck
See,
into the...
See, because we're second actors, baby.
You know, so I actually snuck into Moulin Rouge's invited. I really wanted to see Natalie Mendoza. I really like Natalie Mendoza. I got to see her the night Chris Tierney had a horrible accident in Spider-Man. I think it was one of her last performances. So I actually was there. And I've always just been a kind of a fan of hers. She's kind of on the periphery of American culture, but So she was, you know, Satine, and I was like, I gotta go. I can't afford $500 tickets. I have a bunch of friends in Moulin Rouge. We work together on Katie Keene. And their invited dress was a little bit different. They were doing like a first responders night on Broadway. So they gave the entire house tickets to first responders, which to me was like ding, 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 ding. First responders. That means someone's going to have to first respond tonight and they're not going to show up. So parked my little twink ass right in front of the theater. I looked at all the people with folders of tickets and I just humbly was like, you know, I've got, you know, and it worked out. So I actually got to see Moulin Rouge. I also saw Carolina Change twice. I'm a huge fan of Carolina Change. And I had tickets to see the first preview before COVID, which was on my birthday, March 15th. And I was like super pumped. And of course, we had the shutdown. And so I was supposed to go to the opening of Six on that Thursday or Friday. And that got shut down as well. So I got tickets to see the first performance of Caroline. I'm a huge fan of Sharon D. Clarke, who's a consummate like pillar of the theater in the UK.
I've seen her several times.
Now. Right. Similar to like a Lilias White or maybe a Jennifer Holliday even. Yeah. And so this is her first time on American soil, like performing. And she's not, you know, none of the shows she's been ever brought her over. So I was just so pumped about it. And she was wonderful. I actually saw it again a couple days ago, actually. A friend invited me. And so that was great. And I've been to the opera as well. I saw opening night.
That's a question I've had because I've talked to friends at the opera. How? Because people aren't really telling us what's going on at the opera. I know that the Metropolitan is checking everything going in. What is attendance like at the Met? How big are the houses?
So I went. I cheated. So I went opening night, which was, you know, packed to the nines. They opened with Fire Shut My Bones by Terry Blatchard, which was pretty phenomenal. Actually, it was a pretty transcendent night in the theater to see. Just to see like proper gospel music performed at the Met, and also like a really amazing step combination from the choreographer director. And it was visceral. Like you could, the whole audience was a bit like, and it was almost like they'd never seen this stuff before. Of course have, but it was just kind of a treat to see it at the Met. But in terms of like the precautions, like they're starting late. Every show I've been to started like 15, 20 minutes late. They are checking everything at the door. And, you know, you do have to keep your mask on the whole time, which I hate. But, of course, we have to do it. I only hate it because I've been, like, breaking out. I've been a bit of a little theater slut. So I've been going to a lot of shows. And I'm getting, like, you know, the mask. I have to bring, like, one mask per intermission just so that I can kind of keep the, you know.
Jason, you've been traveling a lot, and I know that you've not only done performances, but you've been to performances. I actually saw you this summer. How has it been in terms of the audiences? When you're in the audience now, how safe do you feel?
Well, I've only been in one audience actually. I was at Seth's show at 54 Below last Wednesday, and it was packed. It was we all had our mask on, you know, it felt very safe and like everything was being done as it should. I also know that. I also know that like the backstage handling of this, I know a lot of people as well in Broadway. It's been really intense, and so I feel like every precaution is being taken. I'm having drinks tonight with Tim, who you're the lighting designer from Six. Randomly mentioned
so
that.
So good!
I just know that I've only had one live experience besides doing my shows in Provincetown, but when I did my shows in Provincetown, they had not. My last show was the day before they redid the mask mandate. So there were no mask mandates in my show.
Yeah, I'm curious. Mark, I know that you've done some online shows. Have you done any live shows in front of an audience?
Have I? That's a good question. I performed on Fire Island. A friend of mine invited me out to be a guest singer in his show at the Ice Palace. So, I mean, that's the only thing I've done. But, I mean, there's no masks on Fire Island.
Right, of course. Johnny, have you done anything?
No! No, well, I'm very jealous. I'm very jealous of you boys.
Yeah, except I happen to know that you, because you're mostly television and film, yeah, and you did shoot a film with a good friend of mine, Sherry Shepherd.
Sherry Shepherd, yes, actually.
Was that last month?
That was in June.
A couple months? Oh, okay. And what was, well, June, well, where were you shooting?
We shot in upstate New York, actually. We shot the whole thing upstate New York, in and around Hudson.
So were there precautions and like mandates going on?
Oh yeah, it was really tough. I gotta say, my heart, and I actually was thinking about the folks in the theater, because film seems to be a bit temporary. You know, you do it, mm-hmm, for a time and you're done. And we actually, I didn't have to wear a mask all the time because I was on camera all the time, but everyone else did. And I remember one day we shot like a crazy like battle scene in a car garage, and it was 98 degrees outside.
And you were in an enclosed area.
No air, with lights, and with like the fog machine going all day. We couldn't really, and everybody is just dripping, and everybody's got the mask on, like the surgical mask even. And it was just, it was so intense, and I could see the crew, and I just felt so, I was dying, but I wasn't going to say anything because the crew is right there holding their equipment,
much doing worse their thing. For them.
And we actually got shut down twice off of false positives with the COVID tests.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Did anybody actually get sick?
Nobody got sick, but we had two false positives that put us back. And actually, we had a really sad false positive on the last day of shooting. And so we lost about 6 hours the last day. Really important stuff. So we had to kind of just, it's the day that something happens, and kind of re-rig stuff and redo stuff and rewrite stuff right on the spot. But luckily, none of the cast had any issues. And I have to say, like, Sherry lit a fire in my heart. She became like a mama bear on the set, and we had to be very close. And so she was just, we're cut from the same cloth musically. So like any song I came in singing, like Sherry would like finish the line with. So it was amazing.
And dance. And dance.
And then, you know, the director was actually Barry, who kind of created Barry's Boot Camp. So.
Oh, yeah, right.
If Chaka Khan or Dreamgirls was uttered at all, production would stop so that we could finish the line. Like, it was just me and him finishing Dreamgirls. At one point, I think one of the ADs came up to me and was like, Johnny, you got to stop singing Dreamgirls.
Yeah, we're running over budget. let me ask Mark. Mark, you did an interesting post. Nana's got to put on her glasses. Apropos of the situation.
Terrifying.
You know, sorry. Apropos of the situation with Chad Hudson. So, well, not Chad Hudson.
Oh, Chad Kimball.
Kimball. Okay. So for people who don't know the situation, Chad Kimball had been in the musical Come From Away, which... because of his religious beliefs, is this what it is basically? He doesn't want to get a vaccine because of religious beliefs, and therefore he has not been asked to rejoin the company. Do I have that right?
Apparently he's been vaccinated. He posted recently on Twitter that he has been vaccinated. From my understanding, he's suing the company of Come From Away because they didn't renew his contract. Mm-hmm. But I think he's citing religious reasons.
Yeah, he is.
But I mean, what I posted was, you know, he wasn't asked back because he very publicly posted on Twitter that he would ignore like state regulations and COVID safety,
right,
and not wear a mask. So, I mean, any producer seeing that wouldn't hire you back. It has nothing to do with his religion. It has everything to do with that he's back. He's a liability for the production.
Right.
So, I mean, like,
and what you wrote was
if you're going to make posts like that, there's consequences that come with that. And not being rehired is one of them. Also, I mean, mm-hmm, per equity rules, if a contract shuts down for longer than 6 months at a period of time, they don't have to hire anyone back.
They could
recast the entire cast. You're not owed a contract after 6 months. And
it's
understand.
It's like a new production.
COVID's a very strange situation. They've never experienced anything like this before, that we've been shut down like this. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, someone could argue that if they wanted to, but I mean, it's the fact that you're not owed a contract.
what you wrote was very funny. You said thank you.
Posted things that would make him a liability. So
it would make him not appealing to an employer. And so what you wrote was, thank you, Chad Kimball, for suing Come From Away. It'll be nice not having to, having, what is this? One less person in the audition room when auditioning for these jobs. So, which I thought was very funny, but you got a little bit of crap for it. You know, there's always, anything you put out there, there are going to be people who say, yeah, you're right. And somebody's going to like, well, this poor guy, you know, losing his livelihood. Do you take that into consideration when you write, or do you just put it out there and that's not your problem?
No, I absolutely think about everything I post. I mean, especially this past going through COVID and Black Lives Matters and how that all started. I'm very aware of when I post something, how it will be seen through the lens of different people,
or from the person you're writing about. I've heard
really interesting articles where they talk about you know, like white people using reaction gifs that are of black actors or black actresses and how that could be perceived as digital blackface. So like, I'm even very cautious of like going through and like making sure I'm using, like if I'm responding to someone's post on Twitter and it's, you know, not using certain gifs because I don't want someone to be like, oh, like he's, you know, he's doing that. So I think about everything that I post. I think it's important. I think people should. But if you're gonna be foolish enough to sue the industry that you're trying to be a part of, like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, if something seriously has been done wrong to you, like if you've been wronged, if there's been like sexual harassment or something like that, please, yes, you need to come forward and say something. Sue whoever is responsible.
But there will be consequences. In this situation with
Chad, like Chad, baby, you put your foot in your own mouth, like. Nice. This is on you, and now you're trying to sue. Like, you'll never get hired ever again based on this. Like, not just what you said. I mean, time could have gone by. Someone would maybe have given him a chance in the future, based off just the post that he said about, you know, ignoring safety protocols.
Right.
But the fact that he's now gone and is suing the production, like, no one's gonna touch him. Like,
you're right. I've sued my former producers. Would you like to hire me? I mean, you know, doesn't really
right.
work.
And producers that, I mean, I don't know the full story, but like Tamika Lawrence commented under his post that he put up where he talked about his lawsuit. And she was saying, she said, I can't believe you would do these to producers that gave you a second chance after what happened when he was on tour. Like I think it was rehab or something. Like he left, I don't know if he left the company or I'm not sure the full details, but I know he had a problem.
But they helped, but they allowed.
And they forgave it and they brought him to Broadway and now he's suing those people. Like it's just, crazy to me.
Well, you know, talking about ramifications of posts, yeah. Jason, last time you were here, we had a very long discussion, which people loved. And again, people came on both of our sides about it, which is the best kind of show as far as I'm concerned. We had a discussion about the breakup with your ex-husband, Del Shores, who's a friend of mine and you are on good terms with. But you took issue with some of the things I said, and not just me, I think because you were talking to me, we spoke about me, but lots of people weighed in on both sides of your breakup like they were involved. And of course, they weren't. And I had said that the more you put out there, the more permission you're giving for people to give a comment as if it's their lives. So interestingly, you've now gone through another breakup. And you
I didn't go through a breakup.
You did not say breakup, right? I'm sorry. The relationship has transitioned, but
there was a transition and continue.
Okay.
What you're saying.
So the point was that you handled this situation very differently and said, I'm not going to share everything with everyone. It's nobody else's business. And I don't really need all of you to weigh in. Which I thought was really interesting. So,
but doesn't stop them from weighing in, though.
Well, I mean, though, that's true. But somebody like me did. I didn't. But now I also know you a little bit. But I'm just curious why you handled this differently. Was it because of your previous situation, or was it that you've now chosen how much you need to share?
I made that decision I made that decision because I love somebody.
Mm-hmm. But presumably you loved Dell when you broke up as well.
Well, I mean, of course. But the difference is that, you know, there's been 10 years since that divorce. And not everybody is, you know, not everybody that's in our business thinks the way that, that other people in our business think. And sometimes you can be with somebody who really, 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 really loves privacy. And so then therefore you can provide that to them by talking about plenty of other aspects of your own life and choosing to keep your relationship and any details about it basically, you know, just basically private. It's easy to do for someone else. But Dell never wanted
yourself.
That. Dell never cared.
Well, but Ian, for yourself, I presume. I mean, now you just said that it didn't stop people from weighing in. But is this one better because of how you've handled it in terms of what you have to deal with from the public?
No, the public doesn't. Honestly, the public never changes. All it's given me the freedom. All it's given me the freedom to do is to finally say, guess what? Like, I'm not talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's a little bit liberating to just to have something and say, you know what, I've said that we're not talking about this and we're not talking about this. And so you can keep asking, but we're still not talking about it.
And I have respected that. And you and I were in communication. I said, I thought I reached out to you, but I said, I don't need to know anything. And I hope everyone's okay. And
you reached out in a friendly. You reached out in a friendly way. You reached out as a friend.
It was privately. It wasn't publicly. And I don't know. I mean, I suppose you've said it, and I don't mind saying it. You guys are still working together, and Seth is still performing, and you're still involved in his professional life.
Yes, I mean, yes, I mean, but we are boyfriends. I mean, that is like the baseline. That's all the information anyone ever gets to know. I mean, that's kind of undeniable when you go around and you're introducing somebody as your boyfriend. But beyond that, there's there'll be no post on my Facebook that says, like, you know, this is my, it's just, that is a basic fact. And then beyond that basic fact, like, there's just nothing else that needs to be shared.
Right. No, and I agree with you. And I think that it's been interesting to watch.
I want
to
filter.
Let me just say.
Me too, sis.
Let me just ask Mark a question. Mark, when you and I first met, you were involved in kind of a high-profile relationship. I don't know if you had spoken about it, but people knew. I'm not going to go into it here. But did you feel that, you know, it gave permission, because you're both public people, for the world to weigh in?
I mean, I was posting a picture with him like every other day.
Okay,
there was no need for anyone to weigh in. Like, it was what it was.
It ended, did you regret having been so public? I guess that's my question.
I guess I was just, I don't regret it, no. They always say don't read the comments. Which I wish I could do, but sometimes I'm bad at it, and sometimes I have my friends are bad about it. Sometimes my friends will send me articles of like pictures of us when we were together, and someone sent me a link to this like chat thread that people were like talking about how pathetic I was, and they're like, I can't believe Mark McKelp was just constantly posting photos of him, and he never posted any of Mark on his social media except for one. And they're like, how desperate is he? Like, it just went on and on. And I was, so I don't regret being as public as I was, because I was happy.
Right.
But I don't regret it.
My advice for you, I read the comments all the time. The comments are the best part, but you read them and you film yourself. And then you share all the best, the meanest ones, the best ones, the most clever ones. You like post, share the person's screen name. When someone takes the time to be like really be hateful and they can be clever and funny about it, like, I'm all about like letting them know, like, you're giving me a great laugh, buddy, and thank you very much for your time. So
Mark, can I just say to Mark, Mark, go back and watch the show with Jason and I, the last show, because this was years ago, but we had such, he actually confronted me, and I certainly wasn't the worst, but he confronted me. We actually had this conversation that afterwards, I think we both felt better. So sometimes
I'm here.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But anyway, continue with your advice to Mark. Well, Mark, I don't think you're holding on to anything now.
Sorry, what?
I don't think Mark's holding on to anything. This was years ago.
Oh, yeah. No, this is we broke up like the October before COVID started. So it's been years. Yeah.
Johnny, I have no idea about your sex life. Have you been in a high profile with a high profile person where people were talking about you?
Not publicly.
Anybody want to tell us about it?
I had a very serious boyfriend for a really long time. And they really saved me. Like, I was in a really bad way, financially, mentally, and my boyfriend at the time picked me up and really helped, like, nurse me back to health so well that I ended up booking, like, the male lead of Katie Keene, like, that year.
Oh, wow.
And our lives really changed. The dynamics of the relationship also changed. And unfortunately, it didn't work out because I, for various reasons, but I was really busy. And I was so happy for the first time in our relationship. And I don't know if I'm answering your question, but...
you are, kind of.
I remember having conversations, like, I had been coached through Warner Brothers and I had to go to the Warner Brothers Academy with all of the new actors of the pilots of that season. And we all went to Warner Brothers Academy for 2 days and learned how to exit a car, learned how to walk a carpet, learned the questions, like what to say, what not to say. And they grill you and test you and they don't humiliate you, but if you mess up, they make an example of you. And it was really helpful. And so I actually didn't post my boyfriend constantly. And that really hurt him, I think.
Really?
Yeah. I think that he believed that I was just going to leave him for whatever direct, like, he kept saying director.
That now you're doing okay. See ya. Yeah.
It's like, now I'm supporting us. Like, I'm paying all the bills and now I'm going to go leave you for, so it really didn't make any sense, but he was clearly was hurting about that. And he had an affair while I was working 16 hour days every day. And when I wasn't working 16-hour days, I was in the recording studio recording the music or with Kelly Devine love Kelly Devine, by the way, doing my rehearsals for the movements and meeting with the girls and doing our rehearsals. Like, I was really in that season one of Katie Keene.
And how can a relationship survive that anyway, in the best of times?
Well, you know what? It's got to be solid before. It's got to be solid before, and there has to be trust. And I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes. And one of those mistakes I didn't know is that my partner he lost trust for me in a way that I didn't really recognize because I was living my dream. And so I was like, he's being ridiculous. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, he accused me of, like, fucking people in my dressing room. And I was like, when? I am strapped into this bitch. Like, I am in drag for most of this show. Like, I can't even take a piss. Like, who am I, you know? It was so insulting to me. And he was hurt that I didn't bring him to set, but I was like, you know, the tone is set by number one, and nobody ever had anybody to set. Everybody had partners,
and
everybody has
work,
husbands.
And there's pleasure.
Yeah, and so every event, he was on my arm. You know, we did press in Las Vegas. We did the iHeartRadio Festival. I actually forwent some, like, my first class tickets and stuff so that I could get him a flight. I took him with me. You know, he was my man, and I wanted him with me all the time, and he was styling me at the time, so my outfits got really exciting, and I thought it was great, but it really didn't go well. And so I actually don't have the answer. Like, I have regret. I'm like, should I have posted my boyfriend more? Should I have done that? Or should I have just kept it separate? I don't know. I don't know. But I know that he didn't feel like I was really there for him in that way. And
I've got some good advice
Jason,
for that too, actually.
Go ahead.
And this came from my friend Daniel Isengard in New York City. He said, the minute you take your relationship and make it a threesome, you're going to have problems. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And what he meant by that is that when your relationship is just you and your partner, you don't have problems. But when you add the threesome is the internet. When you add the internet
or the
to
public.
It, the public to it, then you all of a sudden are going to have problems that you would never have otherwise. And it's really easy to figure out how to do it. And in my opinion, it's by what makes the relationship the most comfortable. And as someone who's been like in a mega public divorce and a mega public marriage, and then now a very private one, I can tell you that they're exactly the same, because the one that was very public wanted to be very public, and the one that's now very private wants to be very private. And so it's really more about what the relationship needs than it is about you or about the other person. And if you focus on what the relationship needs, it will just answer itself.
Well, that's really good advice, Jason, because I clearly didn't do
thank
that.
Thank you.
I didn't do that. And my relationship ended. It ended really sadly for me, not so much for them. And then COVID happened. They broke up with me like right before COVID. And then COVID happened and I was just alone in this studio apartment. And then I lost my job. So like the reason for me losing this relationship, I also lost my job and I lost my partner. I almost lost my apartment. It was tough. It was tough.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Well, I mean, you guys. I'm sorry. I'm gonna be the cheesy one here, but baby, your house falls apart when the foundation needs to be rebuilt. So celebrate it.
Oh
celebrate it.
God.
Like you have
Jason,
a chance. Now you have a chance.
Philosopher.
To start. Well, this is all I talk about online. So now you have a chance to rebuild and to take all the lessons that you learned from that past relationship and apply to the great new one that you're gonna have next time. And sometimes it's a lot easier to start from ground zero than it is to keep trying to patch everything that's falling apart. So
can I
a total
just bring
collapse
Mark
is a blessing.
Second. Mark,
yeah.
This has almost nothing to do with this, but just as he said that, I remembered something you told me. I don't know if you wrote this publicly, but you went on a date at a bar and the guy went to the bathroom. Do you remember this story?
No, but keep going.
Okay. So you now I'm not sure if you were on a date or thought you were on a date, but the guy went to the bathroom and somebody came back to you and told you that they saw the guy you were with giving a blowjob in the bathroom.
Oh,
does
yeah.
Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Which time? I know. So, I mean, when that happens, because it's a great story. I don't know if you posted it or you just told me privately, but I remember us laughing about it. At the time, can you see the humor and say, you know, this is going to be a great story? Because when the soup fell on my lap and I was in the worst pain I've ever been in my life, I also thought, this is the most ridiculous thing that has ever happened to you. And you have to remember this. But at the time, you also feel like you're going to pass out.
It was just funny because this boy had been like hounding me for a date. Like he was like, I really want to go on a date with you. And I was like, okay. I mean, he lives between here and LA. It was what it was. He ended up texting me and being like, hey, I'm at this drag show. There's a seat next to me. Do you want to come? And I was like, sure, I guess. So I showed up and was sitting there. And then at one point, yeah, he got up and went to the bathroom during the drag show and was taking a while. And when he came back, like, didn't say anything. But then I was talking to some other guy and I found out through the other guy that he was receiving some oral sex from the guy that I was.
Oh, receiving. Oh, well, receiving's a whole different ball.
Yeah, it's different.
I thought he was giving. That is very different. I know, I'm sorry. I'm just... Because right now I can't receive anything. So.
Oh, no, he was giving it. He was giving head.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, honey, he's and he was gone for a long time. He saved you a bad blowjob. So consider that a blessing, too.
So you heard, but you've heard from him since.
No, I just stopped reaching out to him.
Would you go out with him again?
No.
Okay. All right. I'm just curious. Would anyone go out with him again, Jason?
With whom?
The guy who gave the blowjob in the bathroom.
Not if it took him a long time. No.
Oh, my God. Immersive heaven. Johnny, you would never do something like that. That's trash, right?
What's trash?
The guy. The guy going off on, and giving a blowjob in the bathroom. Really, it wasn't a date.
It depends. It depends on the vibe. It depends.
No, but if you're asking someone to, like, you're trying to court them and you're trying to take them
Mark,
on date.
In your defense, no, this was not acceptable. He asked
and
you
again,
on a date, and he's going to blow somebody.
Say,
yeah. I'm sure he tried to kiss you after that too, which is that's a whole
other
thing.
Oh well, no.
But no. You know, I said. I
have your side too, Mark. I'm just being funny, but yeah, it would have not gone over well.
Finally, Jason, I was waiting for your support here.
Yeah, I was just being silly, but no, I
and
yeah,
can I
fully
just point out? Look at this. Would you cheat on that?
Many people have.
I know.
I'm not going to name names. We're not going into it. But yeah.
Okay, getting back to topics of COVID, do you, Mark, have anything lined up? I mean, what are auditions and things like now? Are they happening?
I just had my first in-person dance audition like 3 weeks ago, which was an experience, let me tell you. Going from not doing anything for 2 years, like just laying in my bed watching Netflix, just
eating
suddenly getting
Domino's
up and having
pizza.
To kick my face again, I was like, this body doesn't like doing this. just auditioning right now. I mean, I have a couple concerts coming up that I can't talk about yet because we're still working out details.
Mm-hmm.
The calendar is in pre-sales right now, and my book starts. I guess I'm announcing it on here. I'm starting pre-orders for my book on Monday for the Anastasia book that I'm doing.
Right. Cool.
So it feels like I went from doing absolutely nothing for 2 years to all of a sudden like
life is starting again.
There you go.
Good, I guess. I'm getting back to real life.
What about you, Johnny? You know, again, what I think has been great about film and television actors is that through the pandemic, they have been able to work and find a way. You know, they were the ones that bounced back because they just had to pivot their protocols. So do you have anything else coming up or lined up? Are you still auditioning? What's happening?
Yes. Before COVID, My audition life had been very heavily in tapes anyways. By the time, I mean, tapes had been, I would say for like the past 5 years, tapes became the norm. I had some in-persons once in a while, but usually tapes just because the casting pool has gotten so big now because of digital. So, I mean, now you have a part, now Australia submitting, London submitting, Canada submitting, Iceland's, everyone's submitting, right? So the tapes have been kind of normal. I've had no in-persons, period, since then. There was a little bit of a hiccup, though, during COVID, because television made this amazing decision that since Broadway was closed, they were going to favor Broadway performers in guest roles and in kind of any kind of procedurals, just so that they could keep them working. So all of us girls on the front line who was trying to get those guest stars, we were like cut out actually completely. So a lot of my friends, I remember that actually really hurt them a lot because they were like, they were, you know, in folders and in things for like guest stars on procedurals like Law and Order and stuff like that. And because they hadn't been on Broadway, they were just completely not considered anymore. But
don't worry, I'm still waiting for SVU to call me and they haven't. So don't
worry,
they
might.
Take your spot.
Okay, I'm just going to throw this out there. When I was in acting school at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York, the big show was Unsolved Mysteries. Everybody in my class had been on Unsolved Mysteries.
I love
reenacting.
Unsolved Mysteries.
I went in 3 times to be a murder victim. And 3 times I was turned down. I said, doesn't anybody want to see me dead? I was the only one in my class who never was on Unsolved Mysteries.
Too pretty.
Not that I know, and I'm very upset about it. So Mark McKillop, I feel your pain. You've got SVU. I had Unsolved. Jason, are you back in Mexico? Your parties are starting up again.
Yes, my parties have never stopped. My parties are every single Saturday. They have become so successful that we just finished about, I can't say how much, massive renovation on the event space because my party because it's called Jason Dotley's Naked Pool Party, but the catch is that it is the only body positive pool party in town and basically anywhere. Our marketing campaign, we have big banners of all sizes and shapes of guys. And the whole goal of my event is to create a space where this sort of toxic narrative that runs in our community that you have to look a certain way to be confident and beautiful is being deconstructed at my event. And so when I was in Fire Island, I was hearing about my party. When I was in New York, I was hearing about my party. I've now been asked to do one-offs in Miami, Chicago. It's amazing. Gay people are craving a space where they feel accepted. And so as a result of that, I mean, it's gotten nuts. Like, it's gotten, like, my name is on beach balls and my name is on fans. And I just over, I just, we just did a new photo shoot for all of our sexy models for the high season. And it was beautiful to see, like, a 60-year-old man, a hairy bear, a twink, a guy with a beautifully, like, physiqued body. You know, everybody is beautiful is the theme of our party. And wow. And everything I do in the party is to make people feel welcome and comfortable. And so they're going on every Saturday, but I don't have to be here in the summer for them because the summers are miserable. But I do have to contractually be here for them for the next 5 months. So, but I love doing it. It's great. I meet tons of amazingly fun people. And then I'm also was supposed to start my third one-man show here for a three-month run, but the theater got destroyed in a hurricane.
No. So, oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, it did. And so that is to be determined. But I mean, I've got tour dates. I've got tour dates lined up in April of next year. Seth and I are doing an evening with Seth and Jason in Hot Springs in April. I mean, gigs are being booked into next year. I just can't do any of my shows until the end of April, outside of here, outside of Mexico.
So you're contractually for the season, you're stuck there, not stuck. Like, there are worse places to be than Puerto Vallarta. Yeah. So
I can leave Sunday to I can leave Sunday to Friday. I just have to be there. I have to work my one day a week, which is Saturday.
and are you naked?
Well, I mean, I don't. Here's the thing. It's a clothing optional party. It's not a sex. Hold on. It's a clothing optional party where the goal is to be body positive and for everyone to feel comfortable. So it's probably a 50-50 mix of naked and not naked. I tend to get naked 99% of the time, off and on, get in the water, etc. The one time I did not get naked, that someone actually wrote a written complaint that they'd come to my party. And they were there the entire time.
Damn,
and I did not get naked. And I asked for the person's email address, which they wouldn't give me. Mm-hmm. I said, would you please write back and say the clothing optional part applies to me too, because I get to feel comfortable as well. And
but if they know that you're 99%, they're playing the odds. You know, it's the old bait and switch.
And they're going to get it. They're going to get it because I definitely get naked in the pool. You know, I mean, listen, your body, our bodies, if I'm trying to say to everybody that your body is beautiful, I go up and I literally grab my 40-year-old loose, like my abs that are all loose and stuff. And I shake them and I eat pasta and I say,
oh, you get to eat pasta
and that'd be perfect and be beautiful. But it's something that you don't have. Our gay community is cruel. You look at how people are treated in gay spaces, how the guys that are paid no attention to, who don't feel comfortable going to so many places. And my goal was to create that space. And I have done it. And it has been a really rewarding feeling to have someone write me and say, I finally feel comfortable going to a gay place. I'm coming back here for my only other Saturday in Puerto Vallarta.
Saturdays. Let's point that out.
It's only one day a week. And so some people have choose to make it their entire, you know, to spend two Saturdays. It's just nice because a party can be a very superficial experience or it can be a purpose-driven party. And my party is entirely purpose-driven. And so, and I feel like that's kind of part of being an adult is that the things you do should be purpose-driven. Everything you do should be purpose-driven. And even if it's hosting a party.
Guys naked along the way, I enjoy that purpose. Johnny, would you take the nudity option? Well, you've already been nude on TV.
I know, so. Yeah. I mean, like, nothing fazes me anymore. I'm like, my debut on television was Dick Out. So after that,
I have that on freeze frame.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Yes. As well, you should. McKillop, would you take the option?
I do at private residences. I mean, I don't think I'm anybody important, but the amount of times I went to Gunnison during the summer and I was sitting there and like three people came up and were like, are you Mark McKillop? And I was like naked. And I was like covering myself. Like, yes, I am. Hello. Nice to meet you. Like, I remember I was naked at Burning Man and people were writing me, telling me that they'd seen me there. And like in the day and age of cameras, like, I mean, I'm not ashamed of my body. Unfortunately, we've talked about this, like Disney kind of owns Broadway right now. Right. And in their contracts, they have a morality clause. And so, like, if there's a too much stuff of you fully naked like that out there, really? Like, they have the option not to hire you.
So you can't be in Beauty and the Beast? Like, I'm not going to see you as, like, little...
My nether regions have never been on display in a photo on that I'm aware of.
But you've done so much, like, Broadway Bears. Is that an issue for Disney?
I mean, I've never been fully naked in Broadway Bears, so.
Right. No. Right. So it's not the risque. It's full nudity. Disney would have a problem with.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Oh. Wow.
Because it's a very bougie resort, and we have a no photo policy in the entire place. Just because.
Nice.
You can request a selfie. You can, because I get asked for selfies all the time from people who've come in to meet me and stuff. So. I mean, and I've been naked, but the pictures have been taken. The pictures have been taken chest up. But we have a special area if you want to take pictures, because just simply because some adults don't have enough common sense to know that you should respect not just somebody in the public eyes, right? You should respect anyone who is any place with their clothes off shouldn't be having their picture taken. So. We take that very seriously
party. I would be confiscating cell phones. That's what I would be doing. I'd be like, thank you so much for coming. Put this in a bag.
No.
Get at the party.
Wait. This is not the Madame X concert.
I was going to say, it's not a concert, boys.
Honestly, the people that come would not be in your position. You know what I mean? So most people that are there actually don't care if their picture's taken. It's just something that we do just in case there's one person there that does. And that one person is more important than the ones that are okay with it. And so a person like you and you're with the parameters of your deal or your contract, you wouldn't come. So it would make sense. You know, I wouldn't either, you know. Of course, I've done my first TV series. I had my junk erect I think in two episodes, so you know it's old news.
You were erect.
What show is this? Erect penises on television.
Sorted Lives.
That was the Sorted Lives series.
Yes.
Oh, I don't remember you being erect. I'm gonna have to recheck that. I have to say
that Amazon are about to go through the roof.
The cock sock kept flying off. Imagine I was monogamously married for 5 years, and all of a sudden, this is the scene. My husband's directing me. And I'm doing it with one of my friends whose wedding I was at, a straight dude. And there's our direction. We're butt naked in cock socks. And I he's beautiful. And I hadn't been touched by another man in 5 years. And my husband says, I need 30 seconds of fucking, and then I need you to come. And the actor playing opposite me, Ted, he just got this look on his face. He knew the scene was coming. Like, that was obvious. And I said, just hold on tight to my back, and I'll do all the work. Well, I got so aroused that my cock sock kept flying off. And it flew off every time I had to be in bed naked with him. So I finally said, can we just shoot this and maybe shoot around it or just shoot it? I really don't care. And so in all the countries that aired the uncensored version, they got it on air. And then in America, you had to get the DVD to see it.
Gotcha.
But there's montages on the internet of every little time my little penis was shown. So, you know. That's probably already a problem for Disney with me, but
I don't know if I would refer to it as a little penis, but all right. I hosted for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years with Mama. We hosted the Bad Boys pool parties in Palm Springs, which was a fundraiser for who was it? It wasn't Broadway. It was Aid for AIDS in L.A. And it was a porn star pool party, and it was porn stars and anybody who wanted to buy a ticket. And it was so exciting for people, regular civilians, to buy tickets. And either clothing optional or wearing a bathing suit around all their porn star friends. But everybody could take pictures everywhere. So needless to say, if you did not want to be on camera, you didn't take the option. You knew that. But it was, but again, it was kind of like Jason's, is that you had the big bears, you had twinks, you had fat people, you had muscle people, and you had me like in a head-to-toe burka. So, you know. Although now that I think of it, there were photos of me that I had taken off the air, off the web, because I said, no, that picture comes down. Because we all have our issues. It's the same thing. I don't care how good shape you are. There are bad pictures of all of us. So I'm just curious, Mark, I've noticed that the Anastasia tour is going back out there. Are you going to be part of that?
No, I mean, they're already out there performing.
They are. Okay.
Yeah. It's, there was always a plan when we shut down because of COVID, we were only supposed to have 8 more months of our contract anyway, before the tour was going to shut down and then become non-union. So that was always the plan.
Is this a non-union tour that's out there now?
The tour that's out right now is non-union. That was always the plan. They just they tried moving around our dates that we had, thinking like adding them on to different parts. They kept moving our dates around, hoping that we would be able to reopen. But they didn't. I mean, when COVID shut us down, we were all kind of sent home with, they're like, go home for 2 weeks and we'll be in touch. You know,
none of us knew, right?
None of us knew how long it was going to be. So, I mean, they kept being optimistic and moving our stuff around. And then eventually our dates were just cutting too much into the non-act tour. So they just ended up saying they're just going to open with the non-act from there. And you know what? I had a year and a half on that tour. A lot of great memories, met a lot of amazing people working with them. I had my time. Now it's someone else's time, and I'm happy for them.
Can I ask you to tell the story? You posted, I don't know, I think it was last week or the week before, a memory that came up for you on Facebook. Was it 10 years memory of what somebody said to you when you left was it a ballet company?
I think it was, it may have been when I was leaving the ballet company. I can't remember. I was turning 25 someone in my life said, when are you going to give up on this performing thing and get a real job and use your brain? And I look at my Facebook memories every day to see what I've done, to see if there's anything embarrassing that I need to delete. So that popped up. So I shared it and I said, you know, I can't even imagine what my life would be now currently if I had listened to that person who was actively trying to squash someone else's dreams.
If you're ever
that kind of person that thinks about doing that to someone else, I said, don't, you know.
I'm curious what his motivation was. Was he trying to help you, or was he really trying to be like a bitch? Yeah. Oh, girl, it's never going
to
happen.
I mean, to be honest, I don't even remember who the person who was that said it to me. I'm the kind of person, when someone comes into my life like that, that doesn't, isn't going to be supportive of where I'm going and what my vision is for my career and what I want to do, then I get rid of them. I don't care if you're negative and you're trying to shut me down like that. I don't need any more obstacles in my way. I have plenty enough already. If you're going to be an obstacle in my life, you don't need to be here. And so I don't even remember who that person was, because I clearly cut them out and haven't talked to them ever.
You know, you're so healthy. I can't stand it. I would know everything about them. What time of day it was, what I was eating.
I always say I have the memory of a goldfish. It happens with lyrics. I never know the lyrics to any songs that I'm singing. My memory is terrible. People will be like, "Hey, it's good to and this is what I've learned." I mean, I always say it's good to see you, because whenever I say it's nice to meet you, when I'm, you know, someone's introducing me, then they inevitably will be like, "We've met before," and then they get angry, and I'm like, "I meet a million people." Right. Like, so my memory is like a goldfish. So I don't even, like, as soon as I've done something like that, it's gone. I cut them out. I don't remember who they are. There's very limited space in this little cranium.
What was that, Johnny?
I also say that there is always a committee of people around you, both friends externally around you and in the committee that is in your head that you didn't invite. People will always tell you what you can't do. Always, always, always. And you never listen to them, because everything I've ever, ever, ever been told I couldn't do, I've done. And so you just quickly learn to dismiss that, in my opinion. And, Yeah, and if you're not in my life to applaud for me while I'm constantly applauding for you, then I feel the same way. You reach a point where you learn that you're in charge of all the energy that you allow into your life, and when you actually realize that you're in charge of it, you just start saying nope, 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 and it's amazing. And then you're actually surrounded by people that all are in your life for the right reasons, because no one tells you can't do something for the right reason.
Oh, well, of course. Johnny, what about you? Where do you weigh in on the critical people versus the supportive people?
Well, this is a tough thing. I actually agree. I agree with Jason and I agree with Mark as well. I think it's pretty much like a non-issue in terms of like whether it's left or right. But I do find that with the performing arts, for some reason, everybody wants to give you advice. And it's not malicious, but everybody's like, oh, well, you know what you gotta do is, you gotta do, and it's like, you've never for a day in your life actually tried to do this. And it's not the 70s anymore. So like, I get a lot of people telling me all the time, like, well, you gotta start in the chorus. And it's like, it's not the same thing anymore. And it's certainly not the same industry anymore. A lot of things that used to fly don't fly anymore. And so if you have anybody who's telling you no, yeah, you've got to question why. Especially if it's something that you're really putting if it's something really sordid. And I always ask, if somebody says something to me that's really important, I write it down and I write the name, because it's important what they say.
See, Mark, he writes the name. He knows who said it.
I write it down because it's important. What they said is important, but what's more important is who said it and where it's coming from. And so sometimes I look at the paper and I see who said the thing and I'm like, oh, well, they have that's why they're, and it kind of changes things. So, and that's also like when you're reading a script, right? When you're like looking through the script over like who says anything about your character or whatever, it's important who is saying it is almost more important than what they're saying. So,
although to Mark's point, maybe the fact that he doesn't know who said it speaks to how unimportant they actually were.
Perhaps, yeah.
That's exactly it. I mean, there's been times in my life when people have said things to me and I know exactly who they are. I remember the exact moment, because that was something.
Those are the important ones.
They were important and that shaped me. This person was not important. They were, I hate the word hater. They were just a hater my favorite thing is being told I can't do something. And because it gives me so much fire and fuel, and I don't go out of my way to achieve it for them, to prove them wrong. I do it to prove myself. So the amount of times when someone's been like, oh, Mark, you can't do this. You won't be able to do this. I remember when I was training for ballet, I started very late. I was 17. I was the tall old kid in class with like little children at the very beginning. And I remember one of the other little girls being like, you're so bad. Why are you here? By the end of the 2-week program with them that I did at this like spring seminar, I got a scholarship and she didn't.
Yeah. And where's that bitch?
You know, I mean, but I'm also aware that there's like a huge bias leaning towards supporting men in ballet. I get that. But I mean, but there's always been times like that when someone's been like, you can't do that. And I remember there even someone's parent at the studio that I trained at was like, I don't know, you're starting kind of late. You know, I went and got a job with the Atlanta Ballet, the oldest continually running ballet company in North America, and danced with them for 3 years. You know, like I did that, not for that parent, but I remember that parent. I didn't do it for them, but I did it for me. I did to prove to myself that they were wrong.
That's a healthy way.
I always try to put it into a healthy context. I don't want to be fueled by anger and anything dark like that. That's not what I want to be fueled by, but a little fire in my system to get me to be able to prove to myself that I can prove someone else wrong is a lot of things for me.
I guess maybe I should rephrase what I said, because for me, I've only ever been told that I couldn't do something that I said I was going to do. And so therefore, I was already going to do it. So them saying no, didn't propel me to do it. I was already going to do it. Now, if someone came up to me and said I couldn't do something that I wasn't planning on doing, planning on doing, I wouldn't do it just because I was motivated by them telling me that I couldn't do it, because I would only be, I'm only working on my agenda of my
things.
What
you want.
And, right. And what I want. So if I say this is what I'm doing, then this is what I'm, well, like right now, my gimbal just told me. That
I was like, are you about to show us someone in your room?
No, my gimbal.
That's
gimbal
what just, I'm doing.
My gimbal just said, that's what I'm doing. And I said, no, like, no, you're not, gimbal.
Can you imagine if someone was sitting there?
Naked.
Well, that's who he's doing.
It's turned into a very different show.
No, it's actually always been that show, Mark. Johnny, I just want to show you this. We had a comment, so let's just talk briefly about Scott Townsend. Thirsty Burlington, you may know Scott Townsend. Johnny played Scott in a movie called Thirsty. And for those of you who don't know, Thirsty Burlington, who's a performer down the Cape and one of the premier Cher impersonators.
And the only singer.
Has been battling cancer this past year and going through treatment, and wanted to come on and surprise you, but it just didn't work out. But I just want to send Thirsty Scott our love. And he's fighting the good fight. And he's doing so well.
I love
and
you,
I think not in small measure to the support that, you know, talk about how social media can be good and bad. He has shared and documented his cancer struggle online, and the love and support that people have really expressed. I don't think there's been anyone that's like, you're not going to beat this cancer, bitch. You know, there's been none of that, which was lovely. But, you know, that's an example where social media can be so valuable and help somebody. So, Scott,
and with
we love
Scott specifically with Thirsty, since Scott is very young, since the 20s, Scott's always Thirsty, has always inspired so much joy. There are problems.
Well, I can tell you that Thirsty's from Boston originally. Right. And when he was a kid, like 19, I was doing shows in the clubs, and he was not a drag queen, but he was coming to the clubs, hanging out with the girls, learning his craft, really wanting to be a club kid, but not just a poser, like actually become part of the community. And he's always been a wonderful person. So I'm just really glad he's doing well. And we
actually I have a picture of myself in one of Thirsty's costumes somewhere. I ended up
at, no!
I ended up at someone's house in Provincetown one night.
Just someone. We don't know who. God knows.
I think it was Thirsty's one of Thirsty's managers. I can't remember her name. But there was like this like bejeweled like vest, and I was like, I'm putting that on. And so I just put it on. And someone's like, I took a picture and posted it, and Thirsty commented and was like, that's mine.
She'll let you know, bitch.
There was a great photo this summer. There's a group that I vacation with in Provincetown, and one of the people is Bob Mackie. And Mackie loves.
I'm sorry, who is this person? Sorry. I've never heard of him.
Casual.
Just dropped that name.
Get out of here.
Billy. But the point of the story isn't that this is my traveling companion, because trust me, Bob Mackie is not telling people he travels with Billy Masters. I can tell you that. But anyway, they went to see Thirsty's show, and Thirsty had a blazer that somebody was holding, and he's outside signing autographs, and it's cold. And Bob Mackie takes the jacket and brings it and puts it on Thirsty and said, I can now say I was dressed by Bob Mackie.
Oh.
So it was just a beautiful moment.
Bob also sent Thirsty this really amazing original sketch drawing of one of Cher's garments. I don't know if she got it before or after we were shooting the movie, but I remember it was like such an amazing moment, like an original sketch signed, and it was too Thirsty. Like, it's like to be acknowledged by Bob in that way, I think was like a really big deal for them.
Yep. So Thirsty, if you're watching, please, we send you our love. Guys, this has been so much fun. This hour has flown by. I really didn't know, you know, exactly how this was going to go. We've been trying different groups, but you know, you all come from different areas, and yet you all have very similar perspectives on things. Almost frightening. I'm just saying.
Maybe we're all the same person.
Maybe you are. Maybe that's it. I just want to, I want to thank, because, you know, also all three of you have been numerous guests on the show with either alone or in parts of different panels. And I appreciate it. And Jason, you and I have to talk because I want to get Seth on here as well. I think that will be really
sweet. Yes, that would be fantastic.
Cool. Guys, hang out after we close, but I just want to thank all of you right here. Mark McKillop, Jason Dotley, Johnny Beauchamp. You're all real great guys. Oh, let's just say social media where people can find you. Mark, go ahead.
On Instagram, it's at Mark McKillop. On Twitter, it's at Mark_McKillop. There.
And Mark, it is with a capital K. Proofers and I had a discussion because on one of your social medias, the K is lowercase, and there was a little argument.
You're gonna have to find which one it is and let me know, because I think I put it uppercase in all of them.
Okay, I will let you know. Jason, where can people find you aside from at a naked pool party in Puerto Vallarta?
You find me at Casa Cupola in Puerto Vallarta. I am Jason Dotley. My name. That is just my handle on everywhere. There's no other words involved. There's no spaces involved because I am the only Jason Dotley in existence. It's an easy username to get. So you can find me everywhere. I've become a major TikTok. I do tons of TikTok live talks about sexual assault and mental health on a regular basis.
Oh, wow.
You can find me everywhere. And I have to also say really fast that I appreciate how incredibly positive this entire panel has been, because I really strive to make my social media presence a positive part of the internet. And this has been a phenomenally positive gathering. And I think that's been pretty awesome.
Cool. Thank you, Jason, for doing it. Johnny, where can people find you? You're not on social very much.
Well, yeah, I kind of took a social dip after Katie Keene, because it was such a part of my job for Katie Keene, and I got really into things. But I guess it was because it was part of a contention with like the loss of like a very serious partnership in my life. I kind of took a break for a year. I'm kind of back a little bit, but not as much. But my name is Johnny Beauchamp on everything. It's not as easy as Jason Dotley, but it's Johnny Beauchamp. I'm pretty sure I'm the only one.
Well, who is? I'm sorry. I am Billy Masters. I can't.
Got to give you one, baby. She's got to get one in there.
And I will say he's not as easy as I have said in the past.
But I am. So
you are. Yeah.
DM
exactly.
me.
Exactly. And you know, and that guy who was dating Mark McKillop clearly was as well.
Yeah.
Let's be clear. We never dated.
That's true. It was just an empty seat.
And actions made sure of that.
What a phenomenal story, I have to say. I'm so glad.
I have plenty more.
Well, Mark, okay, when I see you in the streets in HK, I'm going to say hi, mask and all.
Make sure let me take my earphones and I'll sell.
I gotta say quickly, because I had been in a similar situation to Mark's, I was dating somebody who was a porn star. And when you date a porn star, you know what goes with the territory. And I was really cool with that. Like when you're working, and that's not personal life. And I would even say, oh, how was work? Oh, great. I was with three guys. Oh, how nice, you know. It was fine. But if somebody went up to him in a bar, like when we were on a date, it was over. So I found out about this after the fact. Somebody said, oh, I just found this picture of your boyfriend. And it was a picture of him giving a friend of mine a blowjob in the bathroom at Mickey's in West Hollywood. Now, I was not mad about the blowjob. I wasn't even mad that he was blowing my friend. What I was mad about is that he was so stupid that he allowed somebody to take a picture of him. Because how could I be with somebody that dumb?
I mean, Billy, you're cooler than I am. I'm an old school type of gal. Yeah. And, you know, friends are off limits. It's just like an unspoken thing. It's like there's plenty of dicks in the fucking sea, sis. You ain't got to suck my friends. But, you know, more power to a bitch who wants to do
what she wants to do. But the fact that they were looking at the picture and smiling, I'm like, okay, you're an idiot. Anyway, Mark, now next time you ask somebody, take a picture of it. That would be.
I also want to say, Billy, you boys have had me blushing the whole time. I've been like just red-faced this whole conversation. So
no, that's from the masks of going to see Six and Caroline are changed. Guys, thank you all for joining us for the show. I will see you all backstage, so just hang on. Everyone, thank you for watching Billy Masters Live. Next week, it's our 100th show, and I don't know who to have as a guest. I've asked two people. There were only two people I wanted, and one of them might be working, and one of them said no, that they couldn't do it, definitely. So I'm now putting this pressure on myself. So if you want to know who's going to be on the 100th show, tune in next Thursday.
Get me and Bruce Valanche.
Oh, no, because Bruce Valanche wants to suck your dick. See, there you go, another one. Anyway, we will see you next week for the whole panel. I've been Billy Masters. This has been Billy Masters Live. And if we're here, we're live. Bye, guys. See you next week.